next guest had to make it work for one of the most difficult places there is, solitary confinement. Snap Judgment.
I was the only woman with a sentence of death in the United States at that time. But there was no really death row for women at that time. So I was kept in solitary confinement in complete isolation.
When she was 26 years old, Sunny Jacobs and her husband Jesse Tafaro caught a ride with a friend down a dark Florida highway. They pulled over on the roadside for a rest when they were approached by the police. There's conflicting accounts about what happened next. What is known is that there was a shootout that ended with two dead officers. Both Sunny and her husband Jesse said they were innocent and that the driver of the car actually killed the officers. But when the dust settled, the driver was sentenced to life. Sunny and Jesse were sentenced to death and sent away to separate prisons.
Every day, during count time, you'd have to sit on your bed and be quiet, no talking, and they would come around and count everybody in the prison. And we used that time because they do it at the same time in all the prisons in Florida. So we would use that time for meditation. And we would both meditate and sort of send our spirits out there and be together. That was, for us, a sort of a more intimate joining than you could have if you were physically together. After a while, they allowed us to write letters. We wrote every day. We would try to keep each other's spirits up. That went on for the entire 15 years.
The night her husband Jesse was set to be executed, the prison officials allowed them to talk on the phone.
They gave us 10 minutes. And at the end, we just kept saying, "I love you." We never actually said goodbye. We just kept saying, "I love you." And then finally, he said, they're giving me the finger across the throat sign, which meant to hang up. And that was it. That was the end. And I just put my head down on the desk and cried. That was the love of my life, and that was it. You only get one of those. And so when he was executed, it was as if he was still with me, because I wasn't used to his physical presence anymore for many years. And yet we were closer than probably people who lived together in the same house, because we had a sort of a spiritual daily life together. So for me, he wasn't really gone. He was still there with me.
Sunny, while fighting her own conviction, spent years waiting alone in solitary confinement for her own execution.
For a long time, I just couldn't imagine that they would really kill me. But I did think, if they ever came to, you know, to take me, to execute me, what would I do? And I thought, well, I'll fight them, you know. You wouldn't let them just take you and execute you. But once you get to that point where there's nowhere to go, where you're a prisoner and there's nowhere to run, there's no help coming, I think it becomes more important to have some sort of dignity.
After 17 years in prison, Sunny's case was overturned on appeal. A key witness in the case admitted that she had lied on the stand about Sunny's guilt. And the driver of the car that deadly night had eventually confessed to killing the two officers himself. So Sunny was released. But she still carried Jesse around with her.
I always maintain this sort of bubble in which Jesse and I had a life together. Even when I was released from prison, it was as if he was still there with me, like we inhabited one body. That's the only thing that changed was we only had one body instead of two. And it actually came to a point where I had to have a little conversation with Jesse the spirit and say, listen, there's going to come a time, I think, when we might not be able to both inhabit this body. So once you're out in the world again, the possibilities open up that weren't open before.
Friends introduced Sunny to new people. She reunited with her children. And there was always this one guy that everyone talked to her about. His name was Peter Pringle. He lived in Ireland. And eventually, she got in touch with him. She was actually going to go to Ireland for a trip. She knew nothing about this Peter Pringle, but when she got there, they met up.
I mean, I don't even know this person, and I'm in a different continent where I don't know anyone at all. Peter was a complete gentleman.
Yeah, well, I instinctively liked her. She's a very bubbly personality, and she has a beautiful smile. She's a tiny woman, mind you, compared to me.
Here's this big Irishman who looks like a fisherman. He looks like the man on the cough drops. I really wasn't sure that we'd have anything particularly in common.
Peter drove her on a sightseeing trip through Ireland. And in the car, she told him the story of her time in prison, of losing Jesse and of her case being overturned. And he seemed more interested, more moved than other people she had told.
When we were crossing on the car ferry across the River Shannon and we were eating our packed lunch, and she turned to me and said to me, like, well, what's your interest in all of this? And I said, well, I too was sentenced to death, and I did 15 years.
Peter explained that in 1980, he had been convicted for the murder of two police officers. He had been sentenced to death by hanging. He fought his case throughout his imprisonment, insisting he was the wrong guy, and in 1992, he reopened his case. He eventually proved his innocence and was set free.
For the first time, I was 3 years out of prison at that stage, and for the first time since I came out of prison, I was able to speak with somebody who totally understood where I had come from. We were driving along the road and talking about our mutual experiences, and at times we would be laughing, and at times we were crying.
It was so surreal. It was as if I'd reached the end of the rainbow, because here we were, happily driving along in the most beautiful place I'd ever seen, talking about having been sentenced to death and being in prison and all these, and it was in the midst of all this beauty.
But I hadn't thought in terms of having a relationship with her at that stage, because, you know, I was uncertain about having relationships with people.
I, too, wasn't sure if I could ever really have a relationship again.
Just because they had both had similar traumatic life experiences, that didn't mean everything would fall into place. Actually, it meant having a relationship might be pretty tough.
Having been isolated for so long and having to sort of curtail those emotions for so many years, I wasn't really sure if I could live with anyone else again.
When I was released from the Special Criminal Court in Dublin, the tendency I had was to withdraw within myself. And I actually went and rented a cottage in the country because I couldn't be with too many people at the time.
Plus, they lived on different continents. And having lost over a decade of their lives in prison, neither Sonny nor Peter had a career or any job skills or any money. Still, they were pulled to each other in a way they couldn't ignore.
Our compatibility is not just the fact that both of us were sentenced to death.
There was more to this than just two people who had shared a common history of injustice. I knew there was something special. It was like the bells were going off in my head.
So Sunny moved to Ireland, and they tried to make a go of it.
We've no money, of course, and we've no prospects of money. But we rent a little cottage, and we have two cats and three dogs, four hens and five goats, all of whom are rescue animals the same as ourselves.
One day we took our two dogs down to the sea and we exchanged rings
on the shortest day of the year, on the winter solstice. We decided we exchanged rings in the morning to get engaged, and in the evening we went down to the sea and we exchanged vows. And we were married.
And now, these days, Peter and I, every day, spend at least 20 minutes meditating together. Except now we can do it side by side.
Big thanks to Sunny and Peter for sharing their story. Check out our website, snapjudgment.org, for more information on the amazing work they're doing right now. That piece was produced by Anna Sussman.